there are comparisons made, and this time, the shoe's on the other foot. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Can't tell you how glad I am to be back with you here in the studio, Barry. It's a beautiful day outside as we're recording this on a Wednesday. And looking forward and hoping the rest of the week is just like this. In fact, my wife and I were talking yesterday at some point during the weekend. And I made the statement that, if it stayed like this all summer, I would not be an unhappy man. You know, 78 degrees during the day, 58 degrees at night makes for a very pleasant Upper Peninsula type summer. Although sometimes in the Upper Peninsula, it gets in the 40s at night.
I don't have any problem with that either.
When I say the Upper Peninsula, I mean Michigan, of course. I've also been in northern Minnesota, and it gets like this as well. But yeah, that's been very pleasant. I'm sure our 90 and 100 degree days are somewhere in the offing, though.
Oh, I'm sure that before it's all over with, somewhere we'll get some of that.
Yes.
Well, Chuck, you know, I sometimes have to laugh that either we are setting the pace, and since I know what our reach really is, I don't think that's the case. But I have to marvel at sometimes that, as they say, great minds think alike. And no, I'm not, you know, attributing to myself being a great mind. But I thought it was just absolutely humorous that when we recorded last week's program, if folks listened to it, you understood that Chuck and I went into a fairly extensive discussion about the philosophical religious underpinnings and the differences in the Muslim outlook, the Sunni versus Shiite conflict within Islam, and how that was driving quite a bit of what we're seeing in the news and the issues with ISIS, ISIL, whatever you want to call them. You know, you can go to the Taliban, anybody, you can roll through all of these various different groups that are trying to extend their kingdom by force. Scripture says, Chuck, that heaven is taken by storm or something like that. You know, it's heaven is taken by violence. And I think that's kind of the way Islam kind of believes that they're going to advance their belief system is by violence, by the edge of the sword. And we see that a lot. You know, we've all seen the various videos, et cetera, all of the atrocities, the war, the displacement of people, the rounding up people who are, well, in the Middle East are Christian, that the Islam just cannot abide allowing to continue. Either they convert to Islam or they are put under the sword. We see that all the time. Now, but the funny thing is, no, that's not funny, so probably a bad choice of words, but the interesting thing is that while we were recording our program for last Saturday, John Hayward over at Breitbart News, and of course, you and I, neither one, saw this until way after the fact.
No, because I sent it to you over the weekend, yeah.
Was writing up basically the exact same discussion we were having about the differences between the Shiite and the Sunni Islam internal schism in that religion and how that drives much of what we're seeing on the world stage today. Which, it's a great article. I mean, it's fairly extensive. We will be posting it up on the principlepolicy.com page for your last week, but today's program. But you know, Hayward really nails it, Chuck. I mean, he understands the fundamental issue that we're talking about, that all of the internal conflict between the two camps of Muslim thought, the Sunnis and the Shiites. We talked about that last week. Again, Chuck, we'll have this up on our principlepolicy.com page. Right. We want to link to this article because it's so interesting when you start thinking alike, but he really nails this.
He goes into much more detail than we went into, and it's a good read.
Oh, yes.
It's a good historical thumbnail. about what, and he talks about, it goes actually beyond Sunni and Shiite. There are subsects, yes. And there are minority sects. And it's interesting how many people are in leadership that are in some of these subsects and minority sects, like for instance, the Wahhabis,
yes,
in Saudi Arabia. The Assad from Syria is a member of a minority sect, Sufism. He's a Sufi Muslim who are essentially neither Shiite nor
Sunni. Right.
They're Sufis.
And they're sort of like what we call cafeteria Catholics or picky Protestants. They don't really necessarily hold the Quran completely inerrant. Not everything in there is really necessary. So they're more of the modern mainstream.
Yeah. Well, again,
they believe that maybe we don't really want to do strict interpretations of these documents. Now, it's funny because you mentioned the Wahhabis, which is a branch of what's called Salafists the Salafi. And those are the fundamentalists. Those are the ones who actually believe that Muhammad and maybe up to his first two generations of direct descendants were perfect human beings who should be emulated in every way. Wow. So I guess you might call the Wahhabis maybe the Jesus freaks of Islam.
Yeah, they're also they're more like the Amish, if you will, and I'll tell you why, because they believe that the only way to live is the way the 7th century Muslims lived. In other words, eschewing any modern innovation. If you want to say you want to eschew modern innovations regarding spirituality, that's one thing. If you want to eschew modern things like automobiles and electric can openers and that kind of stuff, well, you need to go away. I like living in the 21st century, man. I'll be the first one to come right to you and tell you that.
Wait a minute. Were there cans that needed to be opened in the 7th century?
Well, not yet, but that's the beauty of it. Our food in cans doesn't rot. The stuff you put in
there's that.
Yeah, the stuff you put in inside of a whatever container you wrapped it up in, it rotted. So, yeah, they didn't need can openers, but they did need canning, which they didn't have. So a lot of people had rotted food and died. So we have less disease, at least in modern societies that embrace modern medicine. Yes, we now live long enough to die from things like cancer and heart disease rather than dying quickly from whatever weird disease spread by whatever weird insect you might be bitten by or by personal contact. So we now know how to cure the plague. If you get the plague nowadays, there's a pretty good chance that they can treat it. It'll be bad, but you'll survive.
Well, that's good. And that's what you call progress.
Yes, exactly.
Of course, these groups, it's not so much about progress. It's about going backwards. But I just thought it was hilarious that as the same time we were talking about this, and again, neither you or I knew this was out there.
No.
It was posted that same day we recorded.
Yes.
But neither one of us had an idea of it being out there. We just happened to just bring that into the conversation because, well, we do that. We want to talk about the fact that there are underlying belief systems. And if you don't adapt and address them or understand them to some extent, then if you get into these battles and these fights with these entities and you don't understand what's motivating them or driving them, you are at a significant disadvantage because that's a big part of it. I mean, if you go all the way back and study any historical work on strategy, tactics, and warfare from Sun Tzu's The Art of War to Clausewitz's book on war to even modern tomes, most of them, if not all of them, understand that you have to understand your opponent's motivations. You have to understand what makes them tick. What is it that drives them? What is their basic belief system? What are the presuppositions that they hold? What is it that they're willing to die for? That, if you don't understand any of that, you go into a battle, you probably are not going to be able to be as effective as you possibly could. I mean, yes, you could go in with people, you know, slinging rocks, and you've got like the latest and modern weapon technology, but oh, well, we saw how that worked out for Goliath now, didn't we?
Yes, that's right.
yeah, see, that all that modern weapons technology is only good up to a point.
Brought down by a 14-year-old boy with a sling and some smooth stones.
When you got someone really willing to strap a vest of explosives onto a child and send them onto a crowded bus, that's not necessarily a military tactic. That is an exercise of an underlying belief system, an underlying presupposition, an underlying adherence to a particular code. You know, these kids and young people who are doing all these atrocities in the name of Islam, or whatever flavor of Islam we might be talking about, are doing so because they've been brought up in that belief system that's their ticket. You know, it's a, honestly, Chuck, Islam is a works religion. It's a works mentality.
Yes.
You've
got
to earn your right to heaven, instead of Christianity, which is a grace based religion, which says that you don't deserve it, you can't earn it, but God is gracious and believe in Him and He saves you, not you save yourself. So anyhow, sorry, got kind of segueing off
but
I just thought it was very interesting that we had that conversation last week. And sure enough, and you're right, it's much more in-depth than our conversation, so
oh,
I
yeah.
would encourage people, if you were at all intrigued by what we said last week, go out, click on that link this week to John Hayward's article in Breitbart and the headline is Shia versus Sunni, the schism Western politicians don't understand and won't discuss.
That's right. And you said, you know, you thought it was a segue. Well, it's not a segue. And the reason it's not a segue is that whether we want to or not, we have to deal with the fallout from this historical perspective, because it is active and working in the world today. And, you know, a lot of Westerners tend to look at Islam as a monolithic structure. It is
yes.
not a monolithic structure. And this is the reason why you'll hear people say, well, this isn't all about, it's not all Islam. It's not all Islam, because some people within Islam do have a more modern attitude and do have a desire to live along peacefully with the West. But there are currently a very active group, and I'll be quite honest, I don't know if it's in the majority or not. In any case, leadership in Islam, Islamically controlled countries, have a natural antipathy to the West. A lot of them would like to revive the empires that threatened Europe clean up through the 16th century. A lot of people don't understand. You know, we'll hear a lot of crying, and Barack Obama, when he was president, would do a lot of hand-wringing over the Crusades. And you'll hear people who talk about the horrible things that the Christians did during the Crusades. Well, yes, did they do some bad things? Yes, they did. But let's talk about what the Crusades were for a minute. And the Crusades were a reaction to the conquest and forced conversion of Christians into Islam. All you got to know is that during mid-1000s, you know, between 1000 and 1500, there was a group called the Mamluk Beys. And what the Mamluk Beys were soldiers that were forced converted Christian children taken from their parents and made into the fiercest soldiers that you can imagine. And again, I will say force converted, because how did they force convert them? Well, they took them away from their parents and made them into Muslims. That's just how you did it. Anybody who refused to convert was killed. Flat out. So this is the kind of mentality in some of Islam that we're dealing with, but it's the Islam that is attempting to spread itself and attempting to do what Suleiman the Conqueror could not do, and that is convert Europe, which is now a vacuum because it has abandoned Christianity, and the Muslims are sitting there going, well, if not Christianity, then what? Westerners are saying, well, of course, we want it to be secularism, and the Muslims are saying, they know for a fact that that's simply nothing more or less than an empty space where God is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. True.
So they're going to go in and fill it in. And in Europe and also in the United States, we've got political leaders who are so blind to the fact that people still want to come in and force convert us that, no, they just want to be our friends. We just need to learn to get along with them in the world. And the way to do it is to bring them here and assimilate them into our culture. No, they want to assimilate us into their culture. That's what's going on. And we also, Barry, you brought up a thing that's very important, and that is, people aren't studying this thing because there's kind of a general disdain for historical study. We can't really learn anything from history. Especially millennials right now really just don't like history. All you got to do is look at what's going on in, like, for instance, New Orleans and Baltimore, which are getting ready to remove, well, New Orleans has removed Confederate leadership statues. Men who were honored for their leadership, not just their military prowess, but their actual civic leadership capabilities. P.G.T. Beauregard and Robert E. Lee and all those things. You know, no matter what you thought about slavery or think about slavery, and I think it's an abhorrent system, which, by the way, Islam doesn't have a problem with in most cases. The people who are still dealing slaves in the world are where?
In Muslim countries.
Yeah, they're in pagan Africa and Muslim countries. That's where it is. The West has essentially gotten rid of that particular way of dealing with labor shortages. We no longer buy and sell human beings. Islam? Well, it's winked at. It's either openly accepted or winked at, still, in parts of Africa and the Middle East. So if you don't understand that from a historical perspective, then you really don't have a grasp on how any of this is going to work and what you can look forward to in the future, because you understand the future by looking back at the past. And since we're a kind of a biblical worldview program, we need to go back and talk about this in the Bible. Did God understand that we can easily forget what came before? I'll ask you that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how did he deal with
just
it?
Look at the Old Testament reminders of Israel. You know, they'd stray from God. They'd have a judge. The judge would bring them back. They'd stray again. There'd be another judge. It just keeps going.
And what did God say to do so that we could remember the historical perspective?
To write it down and share it with your generation to generation.
Well, not only that, build monuments.
And build monuments,
God,
yes.
God had
yes, correct.
Moses and Joshua but to build monuments so that children would go by and say, what's that about, Daddy? And Daddy could then relate the history of what had happened at this place and why that monument was there or why that altar was there. There were all kinds of things that God was very clear. Understand your history. Because once you've lost it, you've lost contact with those that came before you. Now, if you'll remember, one of the things that God did too in the desert was he made sure that all members of the society who had refused to go into the promised land were passed before he allowed the next generation to go in. But he forced them to mark their legacy with these monuments and altars and leaving things, cairns and things to remind them of what had been done. So we have to be cognizant of that kind of thing. And are you going to get decent, really teaching about Islam and history and what goes on, what went on in the past? No, you're not. You're not going to get it in college. You're certainly not going to get it in high school. You have to go out and do the research on your own. This is a good place to start. This article. It's a good place to start.
Yes.
It's by no means the be-all and end-all. I mean, it'll take you 7 minutes to read it. Well,
yeah. Well, you know, Chuck, this is really, let me just kind of segue. You and I chatted about this a little bit offline, but you kind of brought it, since you brought it up, I'm going to kind of go into this. It is occurring to me, you know, as we see here across this country, that there has been an attack upon, well, basically Christians, more so than anybody else, although you can lump generally conservatives into this, too. An attack by progressive leftist liberals who are mostly, you know, God-hating, claiming that all of, if these people, you know, these right-wingers get any kind of power, then they're going to institute all of these barbaric things and you know, and they're going to do all this bad stuff, i.e. they look at some of the probably the most outrageous things that can happen. And basically, and I've heard, and you've heard this too, of having Christians being equated and conservatives, because usually they're not discerning enough to figure out that not all conservatives are Christians and not all Christians are conservatives. But the whole context is that Christians are like the Taliban, that, you know, they want to impose themselves on everybody else, and if you don't comply, then you'll be punished. But I look around, Chuck, and what I'm seeing more often than not is that we know, we've seen what the groups like ISIS and the Taliban do. You know, the Taliban, when they were going through, what did they do, Chuck? They destroyed all of these historical sites, statuary and artifacts. They destroyed the history, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. They went through.
They pulverized the stuff, blew it up with rock. I mean, anything they could, and it was not accidental. Like they were after a military target and they just happened to hit this, you know, antiquity. They were intentionally destroying these things to wipe that history out. What do we see here now, modern day 21st century? We see progressive leftists, mainly, whether it's the mayor of New Orleans or whoever it might be, removing these monuments of basically of the Confederacy. Now, again, I'm not getting into this whole thing with the Confederacy right or wrong.
Yeah,
there is some interesting history out there that even there's a congressional report that basically said that after the war, even the Reconstruction Congress was putting out and trying to and basically making a point that the war was not about slavery. That was not what that was not the focus of the reason why we had a civil war, a war between the states, or for some of us, the war of northern aggression. But that it was really a difference between two ways of life. In the southern area, you know, from the Carolinas, Georgia, blah, 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 all the way to Louisiana, many of these individuals who were the leaders, and you mentioned Beauregard and Robert E. Lee, and of course there's Thomas Stonewall Jackson and others who there have been monuments to put up in these southern cities. Well, now in the 21st century, the liberal progressivists believe that that's offensive, and so they have to come down. And so you have the progressives acting much like the Taliban. They don't want to take a look at the history. And, Chuck, if you don't learn from history, what's the old adage?
Oh, those who fail to learn the lessons of history are doomed to repeat it.
Yeah, and that's right, Chuck. That's what we're seeing. We're seeing all these liberal progressivists, and they're removing these monuments that they find offensive because of their racist intonations. And again, they're not studying their history very well, or they're only studying it from one perspective.
Well, yeah, it's a knee-jerk response. It's a mantra. Civil war about slavery. No, it was not. Was slavery part of the issue? Oh, you can't subtract it out. But it was more about economics and constitutional interpretation than anything else.
Well, really, it was more about two entirely different ways of life. It was northern industrialism versus southern agrarianism.
Yeah.
And you know, folks, you know, you really need to read up on a broad swath of that, because basically, you know what they say, the victors write the histories, and oftentimes things get a little skewed when you only read one group of historians. You know, sometimes you have to read different groups. But that got me to thinking. I'm like, okay, here we are in the 21st century, and we're doing this kind of stuff, and they don't see the parallels between what they're doing, the liberal progressive left is doing, and what the Taliban or ISIS has been doing. I mean, the reason why ISIS or the Taliban, either one, wants to wipe out all of those historical monuments in the Middle East is so that they can rewrite the history. You know, they want to get rid of those things that led up to freedom, and they want to replace it with their particular view of history, where they basically control everything. And that, honestly, that's what the liberal progressivists are up to, too. And I wondered about that, Chuck, and I thought, you know, pondered how far could they really take it and before they realize that there's this parallel. Well, we just found that out yesterday, as a matter of fact, as basically the lid blew off of the entire social media world when a individual decided, and again, now they're spinning it that it was a joke, but it really wasn't a joke. You could tell from looking at the picture and looking on this individual's face, there was no joking about this. This woman, supposedly a comedian, although I don't think she's funny at all in any stretch of the imagination, by the name of Kathy Griffin, decided it would be a good idea, and that's usually when you probably should check and stop and ask somebody else about it first before you do it, and don't just ask your close confidants who are yes men, that she basically posted a photo on her social media of a picture of her taken by photographer Tyler Shields, who obviously also ought to have some
He needs to get some of the flack. Yeah, he needs to get some of the flack.
Yeah, he needs some of the flack, but he should have had a mental check on this first. Where basically she put this picture online of her holding, well, and again, this was a fake model. You know, it was a dummy made up. Her holding the severed head of President Donald Trump. And I mean, it's disgusting, Chuck. There's blood all over it, and you can really tell from the hair and everything else that it's supposed to be Trump. And you know, and she's proudly standing there holding, grabbed by the hair, holding this head, this bloody head up. And she thought that was supposedly, and I don't know if this was supposed to have been political commentary, social commentary, or she just thought it would be funny for her audience. And because she's a hardcore leftist progressive, her audience is mostly of that nature. But that's when the parallels became solidified for me, Chuck. The progressive left is acting just like the radical Muslims. And I mean radical by ISIS and the militarized Muslims. And the Taliban, they're destroying monuments that they don't like to see, reminding them of things that they don't want to know. And they're perfectly okay with, even this is an effigy and not in reality, but hey, how soon could that change, of being willing that if for somebody that they don't agree with or they is offensive to them, it's okay to kill them. It's okay to cut their heads off. You know, and you're seeing the attack that happened out on the West Coast of the young Muslim girl who was being berated by this guy. And, of course, they tried to paint it that he was a white supremacist, i.e. he was a alt-right conservative, and then who a couple people went to jump to her rescue, and this guy killed them both with a knife.
Knife, yeah.
Well, it's coming to find out that, no, this guy is a leftist progressive Bernie Sanders supporter. He wasn't an alt-right guy. He's an ultra-left guy. And it just goes to show that their whole meme is starting to unravel, that all of the problems and all of these dangerous people are not, in the main, conservative Christians, right wingers. But really, as you start looking at it, if it isn't someone who's actually directly affiliated with ISIS or Muslim beliefs and doing these various attacks, and if you look at all the various attacks that have happened all over the world, the terrorist attacks, including the ones here in America that we, because of our previous administration, we would never actually put under the aegis of being a radical Muslim terrorist attack.
But
they really are, like Fort Hood and other places. If they're not directly affiliated and associated with ISIS, they're progressive leftists. They're hardcore leftists. That's what we're seeing. I mean, there are probably multiples of leftists versus any kind of right wing who are doing any of these kind of atrocities. And Kathy Griffin, who basically is a has-been fading comedian whose best gig is hosting the CNN New Year's Eve bash, which I know I wait for with salivating for every year. Don't you, Chuck? I'm willing to stay up and watch that.
CNN's the last one I turn into, so yeah.
And I believe that even at that, didn't she do something completely offensive here a couple of years ago?
It's a smut fest. I mean, essentially, we can't even mention some of the stuff that gets done on the CNN New Year's Eve broadcast. So,
yeah, but here she is, and I'm honestly, if you think about it, she's not the first, because if you remember back during the March for Women, back at the beginning of the Trump administration, you had a bunch of people, Ashley Judd, Madonna, and others who basically got up on stage and basically all but said they wanted to kill or bomb or blow up the president. Now, of course, when Madonna said that, the Secret Service said, we're going to be investigating that. So what did Madonna do immediately, Chuck?
Oh, she apologized. Oh, I didn't really mean it. It's hyperbole.
Hyperbole. It was a joke, Yeah, it was said in the moment. What'd Kathy Griffin do, Chuck? Because she thought this was going to be funny. She posted it to her social media. And then all of a sudden, she got backlash from everybody, including... And I laughed with you because I said, you know what? When you got some of the most liberal progressives in the country, like Anderson Cooper and Chelsea Clinton, both beating you up for what you just did, and you're one of them, you're one of the progressive left, you probably should have stopped and thought this through before you did it. As a matter of fact, Anderson Cooper says, for the record, I'm appalled by the photo shoot Kathy Griffin took part in. It's clearly disgusting and completely inappropriate. He says disgusting and inappropriate. He doesn't say wrong.
Right. Exactly.
He doesn't say wrong. Now, but Chelsea Clinton, who's the daughter of an ex-president, put it this way. This is vile and wrong, period. It is never funny to joke about killing a president. You think it maybe hit a little close to home with her? Yeah, I think so.
Oh, I'd say so. And let's face it, it is going too far to even make a joke about. I mean, I've heard people say dumb things, and I'm like, look, don't even talk like that. Just self censor. I don't want to hear
and
that.
And it was like some of the people who thought it was either good social commentary or cute or funny. That they put like effigies of Barack Obama up during Halloween, around the Halloween time hung or something like that. Folks, no. And of course, those people did get visits from the Secret Service, did get investigated.
Yes.
And so guess what? The Secret Service tweeted out, and from their tweet says, threats made against Secret Service protectees receive the highest priority of all of our investigations. And basically, they're basically saying, we're going to investigate this, so what happens? What did Kathy Griffin do immediately, Chuck? As soon as the Secret Service, I think she was kind of like, oh, okay, people didn't like this, et cetera. Then all of a sudden, the Secret Service said, yeah, we're going to be taking this very seriously and probably investigating it. So what did Kathy Griffin do?
Well, she came out and did made an attempt at a mea culpa.
Hey, you've got the audio for that,
yeah,
right?
I do. Let's
play it, and then let's tell people where we see the flaws.
Yeah. Now, here we go.
Hey, everybody, it's me, Kathy Griffin. I sincerely apologize. I am just now seeing the reaction of these images. I'm a comic. I cross the line. I move the line. Then I cross it. I went way too far. The image is too disturbing. I understand how it offends people. It wasn't funny. I get it. I've made a lot of mistakes in my career. I will continue. I asked your forgiveness, taking down the image, going to ask the photographer to take down the image, and I beg for your forgiveness. I went too far. I made a mistake, and I was wrong.
Do you notice, Barry?
Yes.
Do you notice it was the reaction that made her, not the fact that she had just essentially presented an image that more or less said this would be a good thing to have right. the head of the president of the United States, the bloody head, in her hands. No, it wasn't the fact that was wrong that has her in a tizzy. She didn't do any self-examination and say, wow, that was not right. The reaction got her. In other words, she had to have feedback from other people saying, wow, you're way beyond the pale on this, before she understood that she was way beyond the pale on this, which means she has no internal monitor.
No, she doesn't. Even her quote-unquote apology was clear on that, because her whole point was, I crossed the line, I moved the line, then I crossed it. I went way too far. And why? Not because it's a bore to think of killing someone. No, the image is too disturbing.
Yes.
Maybe if I'd used less blood on the head, it would have been better.
If I just had his head and no blood, maybe I'd been okay.
Yeah, I just had the head and no blood, then I should have been okay. And she's like, I made a lot of mistakes in my career. I will continue. I'm not really sure that's true, because she may have just ended her career with this little stunt.
It's very possible, yeah.
Well, first and foremost, I think the immediate blowback was, as far as I know, she was scheduled to appear at some comedy club or something in of all places, Albuquerque, New Mexico. She's been canceled.
Well, that,
as a matter of fact, I'm hearing that her gigs are getting canceled by a number of venues. And now CNN, who basically has been in a cozy love fest with her. If I remember, seeing one image. I don't watch it, but I remember seeing one image of her and Anderson Cooper together during this New Year's Eve deal where they supposedly host this thing. That they're considering, and of course they won't, Chuck, because they're as liberal progressive as she is, and
yeah.
it fits their belief system. They're considering pulling her from that gig. Well, the point is, Chuck, you and I both talked about this. First of all, unless you're a liberal progressive, very few people know who Kathy Griffin is. Secondly, she's not funny. Third, if the best she can do is to get handout scraps from CNN and host a New Year's Eve program, and that's her claim to fame, her career is on the wane anyway. I think this basically may have just put a nail in the coffin, and by the time she gets done mea culpaing and apologizing and getting, trying to restore what her, well, I was going to say reputation, but we already know what her reputation is. Don't think you can restore that. By the time she rebuilds her career, it's going to be too late. She'll be doing the nursing home circuit.
We talked about this and the fact that it's going to take her months before she can attempt a rehabilitation. In other words, she's going to have to withdraw, say nothing, be quiet, just keep shut up, and then. By the time she gets to the point where she might be able to do a quote-unquote rehabilitation of her career, the woman's already almost 57 years old. I mean, we're talking about she's coming to the end of her. And if you watch these videos, she does not look healthy. I'll be quite honest. She is. I think mental illness can basically pop out as in your physical appearance from in some cases. And she's yep. just a kind of a nasty woman who is starting to appear like a nasty woman. You know, yeah. We all can't remain pretty up until our 60, you know, into our 60s and 70s. I will put myself out as a prime example. This is, she's going to have a really tough time rehabilitating her career after this. If you'll recall, Barry, we were kind of talking about this. The news media was ready to lynch Sarah Palin because during a campaign for her PAC, they had put crosshairs over a congressional district.
Right. A map.
Yes.
A map with crosshairs on it because we're going to be coming gunning for that seat in that congressional district. That's a fairly regularly used, you know, kind of imagery or kind of, you know, shorthand. But, of course, the left made it out like Sarah Palin was some kind of mass murderer.
Yeah, that she was going to be killing everybody in the, you know, in the congressional district that wasn't going to vote her way. It's like, let's not be just, we said at the time, this is taking it to an absurd, it means you're targeting a specific congressional district. You know, the metaphor is pretty easy to discern. It's when this there's no metaphor here. This is in Kathy Griffin's case, there's no metaphor.
Well, it's funny you brought up Sarah Palin because there's a tweet by Palin. And of course, there's an article now in Breitbart about it, that Palin, who has been the butt of a lot of Kathy Griffin's sick humor, because Griffin spent a lot of time mocking her and, you know, and acting like she's some kind of a, you know, backwards troglodyte. Sarah basically put out and said, no one should be shocked at the sick audacity of sick characters. Kathy is a hurting individual. She needs help. And you know what? I think you may be right, because honestly, Chuck, this was all the only thing this thing was an attention getter. This was to get her a bunch of social media to help boost her sagging career. And it blew up on her completely. And of course, you know, again, remember what she said. You know, oh, I just seen the reaction to these images. Oh, and I understand how it offends people. Oh, it wasn't funny. I'm taking down the image. I went too far. I made a mistake. Well, you know, that kind of raised the ire of one Kellyanne Conway, who happens to be part of the Trump administration. Says, Kathy Griffin did not misspeak or misstep. She plotted and posed for a photo shoot. Ample time for reflection and correction. In other words, don't say that, oh, I, you know, in the heat of the moment, I made a quick decision and it blew up. No. This was really something that was gunning to, you know, show your disdain for the office of the president and for the person who holds the office and kind of expressing your inner feelings about what you think should be done, which we've heard a lot from progressive leftists. Chuck, I mean, you know what? If you come out there and look on social media, I mean, this is just a her photo shoot is just a reflection of what a lot of progressive leftists are saying.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I don't know how many times I've seen or heard comments about, you know, killing the president or knocking him off or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And it's just.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to sit here and be, you know, a prima donna about it. There were many during Barack Obama's administration, who were doing the same thing.
Well, I can
now,
remember.
I remember you and I both would excoriate people when they started doing that.
We would call people out for doing. Okay, you don't like it when. Okay, you don't like it when your guy's in. Why do you like it when somebody who's not your guy is in? You can't talk like that. Okay, we do have to show the president of the United States, whoever it is, a modicum of respect for simply having been elected to the office.
That's right.
The fact is, it's the dignity of the office. Now, I think in some cases that's overdone because, you know, the president, we put far too much emphasis on the presidency. Okay, fine. That's a constitutional question. The fact is, it's just like, have I been disparaging on this program of elected representatives? Yes. But I respect the office. I will continue to be critical of people who hold the office because they do not fulfill their duties properly. But I would never in a million years, I mean, I might joke about it between two people who are, you know, of like mind. And even very often I have had private conversations with people who will say something and I go, look, don't even joke about that. It's not funny. And that's where Kathy Griffin and people like her, it's not just Kathy Griffin. All you have to do is tune into The View for about a week. And what you'll hear is people who think they're joking say things that is beyond not funny. It's offensive. And in fact, it's dangerous, seditious talk. And this is dangerous, seditious kind of thing. Look, you don't think that there are people out there really gearing up to take a shot? I mean, there were open talk, Barry, of assassination after Trump got elected and after he got inaugurated. You had people openly talking about assassination. If someone had done that, in fact, there were weirdos who came out and said stuff like that after Obama got elected. And I can remember telling people, I said, just be quiet about that. Don't even think about it. I mean, I'm disturbed that you're even thinking in those terms. We're not hearing that out of the left. We're seeing people that are essentially backpedaling because they got caught and there was a bad reaction. And Kathy Griffin's thing here, I just saw the reactions to this. That's not what should be driving you. I mean, there should be voices of conscience inside the movement saying no, no, no. And I've tried to be a voice of conscience saying, people, look, don't even really kid about that because it's not funny and somebody will hear you who is deranged and think about actually doing it. And all you got to do is go out there and take a look, Barry, because there are people doing, you got associate college professors putting on a black mask and going out and beating people in the head with bike locks.
Yeah, no, I saw that too. And that's pretty bad. So, you know, it's very interesting because, you know, as they were doing this photo shoot, they actually did like a little movie today as they were doing the photo shoot. So they knew what was going on, you know, and basically she's joking that she and the photographer will have to move to Mexico today because we're going to go to prison, federal prison. She knew what she was doing. There was no doubt about it. So she does this whole thing, and then she tweets after the pictures come out, and her first tweet was like, well, I captioned this quote, there was blood coming out of his eyes, blood coming out of his wherever, unquote. And basically, you know, honoring the photographer for his great shooting. But then she follows up another tweet, and then it's like, obviously, I do not condone any violence by my fans or others to anyone ever. I'm merely mocking the mocker in chief. How do you mock somebody by standing there with a photo of you? You're holding their severed head.
That's it, Barry. You don't get to play the game that way.
That's not a game, Chuck.
Exactly.
And that's the whole thing.
They think it is.
She thinks this is all a game.
Yes, exactly.
This is absolutely. This woman is. I think she has PDS. Which is different than PMS, but she has PDS, which is progressive derangement syndrome. These progressives are so distraught over the fact that the life didn't turn out the way they planned it, i.e. they didn't get Hillary Clinton in as their president, that it has taken many of them around the bend, and they're really showing just exactly how vile progressivism really is. Progressivism really means I get my way no matter what, dang it, and you can't stop me. And nothing I do is wrong. And Chuck, where have we seen this before? Nothing I do is wrong, and I get my way no matter what.
Well, I can think of examples, but you go ahead and tell me what you're thinking of. And
I'm thinking of a number of pathologies. So, sociopaths.
Oh, sure, sociopaths.
Psychopaths. Yeah. basically that whole idea that I'm God. Nothing I ever do is wrong. Kathy Griffin only apologized because it was too much. That the image was too disturbing. That was what she apologized for, that the image disturbed people. Not that it was a completely boneheaded move to do this in the first place. Not that it was potentially a crime to either incite or to insinuate that you want the sitting president of the United States dead.
Well,
she just thought, well, I'm sorry that the image was a little too much.
Yeah, let's go back to a biblical worldview just for a second. What was the great hope? The great hope was that the savior Hillary was basically going to step in and continue the march of progressivism in the country and just completely wipe out these conservative hordes who are actually clinging to their guns and their Bibles and their families. That kind of thing. Well, when it didn't happen, what happens? Well, these toxic narcissists who basically you didn't have to listen very long. Well, we're the smart ones. We should be the only ones who are allowed to actually pick leaders. That kind of thing. So really what's happening is I will also put this problem label on people who looked upon Trump as a messiah figure, but they were looking for a messiah somewhere out in politics and outside of where he is, which is the king of heaven and earth, and that is Jesus Christ. There is a messiah. He has come, and he's the one who will save you. It will not be Hillary Clinton. It was not Barack Obama, and it wasn't Donald Trump. Now, that being said, the biblical worldview says, no, that we honor our leaders. Even when we're critical of them, we show them honor. And we get involved in trying to get them to do the right thing. That is a biblical worldview. This is not trying to get Trump to do the right thing. This is a complete loss of any respect for a human being who holds an office and God placed him in that office. There's a complete lack of understanding of that. And in fact, not only an understanding, a complete rejection of that idea. This is a battle of worldviews, Barry. Don't make it sound like Republicans good, Democrats bad, because there are a lot of Republicans. In fact, we've talked about this. Think about John McCain out there running down the president in foreign countries.
I was going to go to that because the one thing I didn't say when I said progressive leftist was Democrat.
Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely. Because folks, don't get into that mindset. Don't get into the mindset that Democrat equals bad all the time and Republican equals good all the time, because that's not true. Those are your party affiliations, not your philosophies. When they become your philosophies, then they're all going to tend to bad. You're right. And Chuck, I'm glad you brought that up, but go ahead. Yeah, because you got John McCain, who's all over the place, and this time he was over in Sydney, Australia, and he's basically trying to take Donald Trump's political head off.
Oh yeah, I mean, but he and Lindsey Graham and Ben Sasse and Mitch McConnell, and McConnell's being kind of quiet about it because he has to work directly with the guy in a leadership role. But let's not kid ourselves; these guys are all globalists, And what you're seeing is basically the battle between globalists. John McCain would be more than happy to surrender American sovereignty to globalist governance. There's no doubt about that. And there's a whole bunch in the Senate like that. This is why you are seeing, you have to have Hugh Hewitt writing articles that, to try to explain why conservatives are attacking Donald Trump. Why are conservatives still attacking Donald Trump? Well, the reason is because Donald Trump is a nationalist. He's not a globalist. I mean, he has, again, we'll explain this, he has global outreach because he is a global businessman. He does business with foreign countries and that kind of thing, which everybody does. But the fact is that this is globalism versus nationalism, and John McCain is openly a globalist, as are these other men in the Senate, and the House is really where the more nationalist, if you will, patriots are.
Right, exactly.
Now, if you want to know what kind of a senator John Kasich will be, what's McCain doing? He's dragging John Kasich to these global, quote-unquote, global security meetings, what these really are.
He went to the Munich Security Conference as McCain's guest.
Yeah.
And he's been touted around. Of course, he did that little debate with Bernie Sanders, which honestly, there was I don't know what the difference was between the two of them, but hey, you know, that's the way it goes. They're out there trying to do this, but John McCain should know better. But what he's out there doing is he's undermining his own president's foreign policy decision.
Exactly.
And you know, he goes over to Sydney, Australia, and basically says, well, you know, Australia, you're not alone in questioning whether the United States is committed to upholding peace and justice around the world. Say what? Okay, and you know why he said this? And here's the quote. Here's the quote. Quote, I realize that some of President Trump's actions and statements have unsettled America's friends. They've unsettled many Americans as well. So there he is, you know, pretty much directly. I mean, but he's careful not to do it exactly directly because he knows better. But he's pretty much directly getting at the whole idea that the president is out there and he's making decisions that are not supported by the American people. What was the decision that Donald Trump made? What's the biggest thing they're whining about? What McCain and really the progressive left media are all whining about was that Trump, during his foreign trip, went to the G7 summit, which is the seven big country nation leaders that are allied with the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, or NATO, and basically told them all, specifically to German Chancellor Angela, it should be Angela Merkel, that the U.S. is tired of basically being your cash cow. And that basically those countries have fallen short of what they owe to the NATO alliance by $119 billion and basically told them, you guys need to pay more money. We're not going to do it. And I think it's a bravo to the president for basically telling these countries, you want us to be the world's policeman or you want us to be the world's banker. And we shouldn't be in either. You know, we should take care of our own interests. But, you know, this is so Merkel's all whining, crying. Well, the time we can fully rely on others are to some extent over. Yeah, you're right. It is over with because why should the United States have to pay for these foreign countries' portion of a treaty alliance, of the security alliance of NATO? Why should we be the ones taking it on the chin financially? He's right. $119 billion is probably a conservative estimate, Chuck.
Yeah.
It's probably much more. He was probably trying to be nice.
Well, as I recall, there was talk that Merkel and a number of the G7 people laughed when that suggestion was made.
I you know what? He's dead serious.
I know.
I don't blame him. I really don't blame him. It's like, okay, guys, you don't want to pay, then you can go it alone, and you figure out how you're going to deal with it. I mean, Merkel's already got enough trouble right now. I mean, she's got Islam, you know, all over the place.
Yep.
and having some major problems.
Yep. Well, okay, Barry, guess what? As much as I'd like to discuss that more, we're out of time.
Oh, I know, we're out of time. We didn't even get to the idea that a familiar name is cropping up in the Ohio gubernatorial race, but we'll talk about that next week.
You know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.